guys, and welcome to another mini episode of What the Faux Travel Podcast with Nick and Amy. This one is all about cycling around the world.
Welcome along to the show. Thanks for joining us, guys. So, like Amy said, this month we are talking about cycling the world, and we're talking to a guy called Nick Thompson. He has exactly the same name as me, spelled exactly the same way, which is pretty cool. But we are not related as far as we are aware. Maybe my parents have had a colourful history that I'm not sure about. So yeah, we spoke to Nick about cycling the world. And this is all thanks to our listener, Stefan, who is from Romania. He wrote to us a while ago saying, you guys need to check out my mate Nick Thompson, who is cycling around the world. So that's exactly what we've done. And this is amazing. He's from Norwich in England, and one day he decided to go cycling and he hasn't stopped. And it's been 4 years and he's still going around the world.
They just couldn't believe that somebody would do all that
cycling
for no particular reason.
Why are you doing this?
I just felt like
cycling.
So yeah, we thought that Nick Thompson, not my husband Nick Thompson, this Nick Thompson, would be a very good person to interview, but we didn't know quite how inspired we would be by the end of it. So since interviewing him, we've actually been bike shopping, which I don't think we've ever been bike shopping in our lives.
Yeah, we haven't bought a bike, to make that clear, but we went to have a look, didn't
That's
we?
That's true, yeah. We found out about the different types of bikes and the different bits that you can put on it for your luggage and stuff. It opened our eyes to that side of life, which because we're not campers, we're not cyclists, we're not really sporty people. But Nick blew us away, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Completely opened our eyes and our mind to alternative ways of travelling.
We kicked off the interview with Nick by asking about his travels and just asking what has he been up to?
I think it was 3 years ago I kind of packed up, sold all my possessions and kind of locked myself out of my old flat share in London and went on a bike ride, essentially. So I didn't really have any proper plan except that I was going to head east, vaguely in the direction of China. And so, yeah, I kind of ended up cycling all Europe, Turkey to Istanbul, went across to Turkey into Georgia and Azerbaijan, hitchhiked on this container ship across the Caspian Sea into Kazakhstan, and went all through Central Asia, kind of following the old Silk Road, essentially, like your Mongol Rally episode. It's kind of following a similar route all through the stands, like Uzbekistan, up into the Pamir Highway, into Tajikistan, along to Kyrgyzstan, into China. By that point, I didn't actually have any plan for after that, and I was running low on money. I ended up working in China for a year as an English teacher just to replenish their bank account, and that gave me some time to think of what I wanted to do next. So I then went up into like Western Sichuan, up into the Tibetan Plateau, and then down into Southeast Asia. I got as far as Kuala Lumpur before having to box and bike up onto a plane. I spent 3 months in Japan, and then I've just finished cycling Australia, basically from Darwin right down the middle to Melbourne and back up to Sydney. Yeah, so I've been on the road for about 3 years now. I think that's about 25 countries and about 30,000 kilometres in a nutshell, in a very large nutshell, that's it. I am not a cyclist. Exercise to me is not really a thing. When I was a kid, my kind of childhood sporting career was lost to Nintendo. It was a means to an end. I used my bike to get to work in the morning to avoid the Northern Line at rush hour. And I guess I wanted to go travelling, but I've been backpacking in Southeast Asia before and I've done like interrailing. I didn't really want to do that. I wanted to do something else that was a little bit more of a challenge. And I really like the idea of overland travel. So like, you know, not having a continuous journey from your doorstep all the way to wherever it is you're going to go or end up. And I think 10 years ago, I did a bike ride with my dad, like from Norwich to Bristol. And that was the first time I kind of realized you can use a bicycle to go beyond your immediate neighborhood. Beforehand, I was always thinking, you know, you need a car to go anywhere beyond a couple of miles. But I thought, if you have the time, you can literally cross countries or continents on a bicycle. And I think after a couple of years of working, not really doing what I wanted to do, I just thought, well, I might as well just, while I'm completely unattached, pack up and test that theory.
So there you go. You heard him say it. He is not a cyclist. I guess before talking to him, we assumed, yeah, he was like a pro cyclist, really fit. But that has shown we can all do it. And I bet there are people listening right now, same as me and Amy, who never even considered a bike as a way to travel. We're all thinking buses and planes and trains. But once you pay for a bike, of course, that costs money to pay for the bike. But once you've bought the bike, you can then go anywhere in the world for free. Like, this is mind-blowing.
Yeah, and like we said, it really opened up our mind. So at this point, we're thinking, right, okay, so maybe we could do it. We're not that fit. We're not pro cyclists, the same as him. Can we do this? So we asked him, what type of equipment do you need for something like this? And what sort of budget are we looking at?
So I don't actually carry a backpack. The bike does all the work, basically. I just pedal. So I've got kind of panniers on the wheel, like on both of the wheels, like, and there's a big bag on top. Like, the bike carries up to 90 kilograms of luggage, like, of equipment. And so I'm completely self-contained. I've got the tent I sleep in most nights. I've got stove for cooking and carry food, water, clothes for, like, all four seasons. So I've been able to, like, you know, cycling across deserts or cycling at 4,000 meters above sea level in the winter. People use different things depending on their budgets. Like, I've seen people with an old secondhand thing, they've just refurbished themselves and gone on the bike trip. There are, like, specialist kind of touring bikes which have all the places you can screw in racks for panniers as well. But a mountain bike is absolutely fine. I wouldn't recommend a road bike. It's a bit too lightweight and not very strong, but people do it. I end up not bothering having a budget because I just end up blowing it. But because my outgoings are so minimal, it's essentially how much I want to eat. And that's kind of the main expense. And that's something that I'm pretty liberal with. I eat for a hobby these days, because you're burning off the calories anyway. It's pretty good. You can camp for I camp for free most nights, just find somewhere to wild camp, put up a tent, and I'm gone in the morning. Your outgoings are absolute minimum. And I think that's probably another reason why I chose the bike as a way of traveling. And I think it's a really good way of traveling, because if you don't have a big budget but want to travel for a long period of time, if you're camping and that, it really does stretch out that money you have.
Now, I would say guest Nick's mind and my mind work in the same way there. So on the daily, all he thinks about is, what do I want to eat?
Yep.
So I feel like this life might work out for me.
So you can essentially travel for free.
Yep.
And then eat as much, of course, you have to pay for the food, but because you're doing all the exercise, you can eat as much as you want.
Tick. Yeah.
Free travel, shitload of food. Like, this is sounding better and better as we go on.
It really, really is.
So something I want to point out before we move on, he mentioned panniers, and we didn't know what they were before the interview. They're like little bags that go on the side of your bike. I think they go on like the side of the back wheel where you can kind of keep your luggage. So that's what panniers are. Of course, earlier we did mention that Nick is not a pro cyclist, but surely you need some sort of fitness level. So we asked Nick, you know, how fit really do you need to be to do this?
When I first started, it was like March. I still kind of haven't recovered over, you know, the Christmas holidays, but you just pedal as far as you feel you could. And like my first day, I did like 40 kilometers or something. You pedal until you get tired, you stop, you have a bit of food, then you keep going if you can, until you find like you've had enough of the day, and you stop and you find somewhere to sleep. And then you repeat that over and over again, making sure you eat more than you think you need. And slowly that distance gets a little bit further every day until you cycled across a continent, basically. I think 2 weeks it took me to kind of build up a level, you know, a relative level of fitness to kind of feel I could do this every day. But there has been times when I have just thought, nah, sod this, I want to have a break. And you do. Like, if I'm having a bad time or if I'm really tired, I'd have a day off at least once a week anyway as a rest day. But if I'm feeling really tired, I'd go find a city, go into a hostel. If it's in Europe, I'll just check in there for 2 or 3 nights and just have a proper break. And at the end of the day, I'm traveling. Like, I'm a traveler who uses a push bike. I'm not a cyclist who's traveling. So, you know, I'm there. I want to see a city. I want to stay for a few days. And there have been times when I've hitched a ride or taken a bus or a train. I've not set out to do like every inch of the way. If you want an excuse to eat whatever you want twice, go on a bike tour. And if you travel for food, like if that's one of the main reasons you travel, go on a bike tour, because you can just, like, in Thailand, I played the game called grazing, which is just going around the night market. And you constantly had to have something in your hand eating for 2 hours. Actually, a friend did join me in Japan for a week. Her first time ever on like a bike trip like this. She just flew out and spent a week in Hokkaido cycling around. And that was really nice. I've been independently traveling alone, but I've met heaps of other cyclists on the road as well. Central Asia is a real popular kind of place for us lot who like do a bike tour. You've got some amazing scenery. It's wild. It's a really interesting place to ride. And it's a real kind of bottleneck, essentially. There's Russia to the north, which is awkward for visas to get enough time to cross such a big country. And Afghanistan to the south, which for obvious reasons is a bit tricky. So yeah, it's a real, like, there's one road essentially going east and west, and you meet cyclists maybe two or three times a day on some places. So it, you tend to meet a lot of people. I also traveled with a guy in Australia. Just met him on the side of the road. He was doing a similar route and we cycled together for a couple of weeks. Just nice. It's good to have the company.
That's good to hear that, as well as we mentioned earlier, eating whatever you want, it actually doesn't seem like a lonely trip. He was just saying how he's met a lot of people doing exactly the same thing. So immediately you're going to be on that same level with someone. You're like, oh, you're cycling. I'm cycling. We've got that in common. Let's travel together.
Yeah, and I really like that he calls himself a traveller that is cycling around the world rather than a cyclist that is travelling around the world, because that's where we would come from if we were going to cycle. But no, I thought that was a good point. We continued the chat with Nick. As you can imagine, cycling around the world, you might not be always sleeping in hotels or hostels or Airbnb or even couch surfing. Sometimes you're going to be camping on the side of the road. Like he said, he's got that cooker with him so he can cook his food. You can imagine that sleeping in a desert by yourself, there'll be snakes, or, you know, someone could just pick you up and find you when you're sleeping. It could be quite scary out there. So we asked him, what's the scariest moment you've had while doing this?
The scariest moment I've ever had was Rochester in Kent, I think on like day two. It's just a bit of road rage, you know. This was my second day. I was going very slow up this hill with a boat that was way too heavy for what I could do. And it was, I think, morning rush hour. And I held up this guy for a bit longer than he wanted to be. And just, you know, he kind of undercut, you know, cut me off, shout at the window, flip birds. I think that's the only time only everyone's ever been aggressive towards me. The times when people have been nice, like, you know, unquestionably, you know, invited me into their homes and all that, I can't count the number of times that's happened. But yeah, only once I've ever felt like in danger, and that was in the UK. About like people and interactions, I think Turkey is probably one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had. Like, whenever I was going through, like, these kinds of people would see me, like, I'd stop into a cafe, have a cup of tea, they'd see the bike, they'd see a foreigner in some village, which doesn't often get them coming through. Yeah, they'd like, you know, end up buying me a cup of tea, and then they'll start chatting through like Google Translate and just asking, what the hell am I doing here? Usually I'd get invites to come back with them to their home to have dinner, and then I'll just to, you know, to sleep in their house or something like that. It was insane, the amount of invitations just I'd receive on the road. If it's just a tea or if it's a meal or just, yeah, it's incredible. I spent 2 days in this village in Turkey once, just because I think I arrived there, it was going to rain that evening, and they just kind of went up to me like, there is bad weather coming, you will stay with us tonight, as a matter of fact. And then, yeah, I sort of helped him out in, like, you know, it was a cherry farms in the area, and so I helped him out for harvest time, it was then, and then they, like, gave me, like, 3 bagfuls of these, like, you know, fresh, organic cherries to carry on the road with me, which, when you're on a bike, is kind of inconvenient because carrying all that weight, but it was just so nice to, like, you know, receive that. Turkey is one of them. You'd have to really find a place to camp that is hidden if you didn't want to talk to anyone. Like, after a long day, if you just want to kind of go to sleep at, like, you know, 8 o'clock at night or whatever, you'd have to be really strategic in where you find somewhere, because otherwise someone will see you and then they'll invite you or do something nice, which it's just so inconvenient sometimes. But I think Turkey for the people, in terms of like epicness, I've got to say like Central Asia, Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan. There's this road called the Pamir Highway, which is really famous, like amongst, I think, like Mongol ralliers and cyclists alike rave about this place. You're like up and 4,000 meters above sea level. You're on the border with Afghanistan, which kind of doesn't lose its street cred, makes you sound like a hardy adventurer, even though it's really like safe. Like, we heard some gunshots one night, and then the soldiers the next day told us, oh yeah, that's just some bored kids. They found a gun the other week and they're constantly using it. But like the sea of scenery, and like it's such a wild place. You can see the Hindu Kush mountains in the distance. You've got like the white capped mountains that are like 7,000 meters tall. And you're just cycling there on a push bike, struggling to breathe.
Damn those Turkish people being nice.
Too friendly.
I can definitely relate to that though, because I am one of those travellers where so sociable, love hanging out with new people and all of that. But once I've done it for like a few days straight, I need my time on my own. That's where I refuel. That's where I get my energy from. I need to have some downtime. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, but a good problem to have, the locals being too nice. That's so funny though. I want to show that clip of audio to anyone who says like, oh, you're gonna go to Turkey, that's as dangerous, or you're gonna go to Eastern Europe or the Middle East. Oh my god, I love the fact that the only problem he had was in Kent in England, and he's been almost everywhere around the world. So that is fantastic. Show that to anyone who doubts, you know, that the world is a nicer, safe place.
Yeah, definitely. And it kind of relates back to one of our last mini episodes where we spoke to another Nick.
So many Nicks.
Indigo Traveller, where we spoke about how the media portrays different countries. So if you've missed that, definitely go check it out.
All right, so moving on. We wanted to know what this whole experience has taught Nick.
I think I'm definitely more resilient than I have been. It teaches you to, like, when your bike's broken in the middle of nowhere and you've got to kind of fix it or find a solution to something, like maybe your tent's broken or something, you find, yeah, like beforehand I'd kind of have a little panic attack and just like, you know, completely like, what am I going to do? I should say I'm not a mechanic. I'm probably the least technical person in my family. It has taught me to be better at problem solving. So there's that element. I guess I'm more open-minded as well, like in terms of, and more like open as a person for social interaction, much more than I was, especially when you're living in London and all you do is like, you know, you don't talk to strangers at all. There's something really similar, which I use a hell of a lot. It's called warm showers. And it's basically like, it's exactly the same kind of setup as couch surfing. You know, if you're staying in a house, you can host people, but if you're on a bike tour, you will then get in touch with these people. It's specifically for cyclists and for people on bike touring trips. It works exactly the same as that, and I use that quite a lot throughout. It's all over the world, basically. So I've used that quite a lot, and when I arrived in this city in Chengdu, I was ended up staying with this French and Turkish couple who did a similar trip I have. They ended up cycling from France all through Central Asia to China, and they stopped and through just personal context there got this job in this English school. So it was kind of a combination of like personal connections, but also I was in the right place at the right time. Right now in China, I think China is a very relatively easy place to get a job as an English teacher. At the moment, with the kind of developing economy and rising middle class, the demand is really outstripping supply. So the companies that are like employing foreigners as English teachers, you know, always looking for new members of staff, basically. It was quite easy to get a job in that sense. Like as a native English speaker, I fit the bill entirely. I emailed them like on one day, I had the interview the next day. And the third day I had a job, I just signed a lease of an apartment for a year. And it was like, you know, I had to kind of find some clothes that weren't like, you know, covered in dirt from Central Asia and stuff, basically. So it's a good place to stop and save money because, you know, you're on a relatively good salary. You can save a lot of money because the cost of living is so cheap as well. You normally get a housing allowance. But it was an interesting year. I've arrived in New Zealand yesterday. I've got 6 weeks here. Winter's just about to start. So I'm a little bit apprehensive after spending 9 months in Australia. I'm wearing every item of clothing I have at the moment, and I'm inside. So after here, I'll got a flight booked to Colombia, and I'll want to do like a month of Spanish classes. I think that really help, especially because cycle touring has that kind of interaction with locals in these villages where they definitely won't speak English because not many tourists go there. I think that'll really just help that engagement with the local population. And after that, I'll head south, down all through the Andes. I'm heading, basically the end goal is Ushuaia in like the southern tip of Argentina and all through Patagonia. And at that point, I don't know. I'm not 100% sure where I'll go next. I've got a couple of options. I've got like Portugal and back home to the UK, or Morocco and back home. Depending on how much money and sanity I have left, maybe it'll be like Western Africa, or if for some reason I really want to delay coming back home, I can go to South Africa and go all the way back there. It's completely open-ended, as I say. I might get to Ushuaia and think, enough is enough. I've had my, you know, fair share. By that point, I'll have probably been on the road almost 4 years now. And I started this trip when I was 25, and now I'm kind of almost 30, and I'm thinking, might need to start thinking about, you know, real life again. I've been avoiding it for quite a long time. I've had a good run, so maybe. It's becoming more popular every year. You see, looking at just the hashtags and Instagram of things, it's becoming bigger and bigger as a way of travel, I think, which is really cool. But then also, you through these like, you know, social networks, you meet other people that you think whatever I'm doing is amazing. Then there's a guy who just blows me out of the water, basically. Like, so there's a guy doing it almost the same route as I have on a unicycle. There's a guy on a penny farthing that has been around the world as well. Like, yeah, whatever level of insane you think you're doing, it's always someone that is crazier, basically.
So that's worked well with timing. So the time we're recording this right now, I heard like 2 days ago that a guy from England has just been the first person to complete a journey around the world on a unicycle. And that's what Nick just mentioned.
That just blows my mind. So where is he keeping his stuff? Has he got his backpack on his back when he's doing it?
I don't know the details, but yeah, he must be wearing a backpack. That must take a long time on a unicycle.
Wow. I just can't even comprehend that.
Yeah, amazing. So you see, there are all these alternative ways of traveling. I feel like these people are going to be like, you travel on public transportation. That is so like 19th century. But yeah, people are just doing it their own ways.
Did like, we know, have public transport in the 19th century?
Maybe I meant 20th century.
So we asked Nick what advice he would give us if we wanted to do something like this, which I think is quite likely.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Have a go. You've got a bike in the garage, you've got a backpack, go out, you can plan this as well, like just go out of your house with like a tent and a, you know, a tiny little stove, or if that, if even if you don't have that, just go to a pub and get a meal. Cycle out your house, find a wood or a grassy bit, camp overnight, wake up with a sort of sunrise, pack up your tent and come home. That is essentially my life, just a little bit shorter. If you like it, great. If you don't like it, it might not be for you. But just have a go. Like, there's a lot of gear that I've bought over the years, which is kind of a bit specialist. And you, if you go online thinking, I want to do a bike tour, and you look at all the equipment that you apparently need to buy, it might be a bit inhibitive. Whereas you can go out just with a backpack or, you know, your old bike that's a bit rusty in the garage, it's been sitting there for years. But yeah, just have a go. See if it agrees with you, if you like that way of travel. In the UK, maybe I'd wait until summer, just right. But yeah, that's really good. Otherwise, there's some really good websites of guys that have done like round the world trips in the past that have got heaps of information. There's this one, I think, called tomsbiketrip.com. He's been like doing this travel for like 10 years now or something like that. And it's just everything you need to know about bike travel in terms of equipment or just, you know. And he's very much that relaxed kind of like, you can just use whatever you have. Don't let that prevent you from going on a bike ride. And I think that's a really good idea because, like, you know, like anything, there are certain things that you think you need, but really you don't. You can find me mainly on Instagram at Cycling Elsewhere. That's where I post most things. There's also a Facebook page, Cycling Elsewhere, or my very seldom updated blog. I'm a bit behind on that, which is cyclingelsewhere.com, just when I tend to write up little stories about what I've been up to. If you've got any questions, you can do that through the Facebook page. That'll be the best way of getting a response. Hopefully, I'm looking forward to getting back on the right bike after a couple of months off working in Australia. Basically starting all over again. Like after 3 months off, any level of fitness I had has disappeared. It's day one all over again.
There we go. Thank you so much, Nick, for joining us. So the name of his like social media platforms, again, is Cycling Elsewhere. But of course, we'll tag him in all of our social media posts about this episode. And we've said it before, really, this has totally opened our eyes to alternative ways of traveling that we never, ever would have considered before.
Yeah, and it's come at exactly the right time because, like we said on our last episode, in September we are quitting our jobs for good. We've actually already handed in our notices and we are going to be traveling around the world full time. We don't know when we're coming back, we don't know how long we're going to be gone for, if we're coming back. So we've saved a load of money, and doing things like this, cycling around the world, will keep our budget going for longer. So I'm definitely open to this.
That will bring this episode to an end. Inspirational stuff. We'll see you guys on the next episode of What the Faux Travel Podcast.
See ya.
Please feel free to get in touch with the show. You can do that by checking out our website, www.whatthefauxtravelpodcast.com. From that, you can find all of our social media channels. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Our email address is whatthefauxpodcast@gmail.com.